Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome on the Sunday afternoon with myself, Muhammad Lambat, on Radio Islam, medium wave 1548, on the Globetrotting program. And we are already coming to December 2020. This year, what should we say? Was it a mess? Some say this year never existed. Some say, what happened to the year? Did we do anything in this year? And others say that this year was the most lucrative year that they've ever had. So there is difference of opinion of this year. But the majority feels that this year was almost a non-existent year, a write-off. It just goes to show that in the beginning of the year, when we start our life, or we start our year, we tend to say that in this year, inshallah, I plan on doing this. I would like to do that. I would like to go here. I would like to see that. I would like to do this. And whatever it may be. But Allah is the best planner of all plans. Many people had tickets booked last year, June, July, probably last year, March. For this year, March, tickets booked to fly overseas. I'm talking of 1 year prior to flying. Tickets are booked, accommodation sorted, everything done, ready to leave a year later. But the planner doesn't want it to happen like that. So the planner of all planes had brought in a small little virus, be it human, created by human, be it natural, be it whatever it may be. But the world came to a standstill. Who would fathom this out in their lives? Who could ever fathom this in their lives, that the world would come to a standstill? When I'm talking of the world, believe me, across the globe, it's been like that. All countries in the world, they either did their own thing in their own country but didn't accept people from outside, didn't allow their people to go out from their country. So somewhere along the line, somewhere, somehow, there was an effect of this virus in every country of the world. Be it North Pole, be it equatorial countries, be it South Pole. Some country had different issues regarding this virus. It just goes to show that Allah is all-knowing. Allah is all-seeing. Allah is all-doing. And what Allah has done, the Almighty Allah has just, at the one click, said, okay, people, chill out. There's nothing to be done for you in this year. All your plans that you've got, shelve them. All the businesses that you've got, shut them. Why? Chase your businesses, chase your plans, chase everything. You can't catch it. It's still going to run away from you. It's going. We all are guilty of that. Me, myself. We all guilty of that. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to myself first. And then I'm telling all of us that this is life and we should look at life differently. We should look at life in such a way that we must make ourselves believe and we must make it known in our hearts that Allah is all-knowing and all-seeing. There were so many people that had accommodation sorted out for them in different parts of the world. Those companies, in turn, started employing more people, whatever it may have been, probably getting more beds and more linen and new linen and getting more of all your cosmetics and whatever the hotel offers. They were getting all that in order, all that planned and ready. Why? Because they have people coming into their country, people coming to their cities, people coming to their hotels. And they need all those things. Yes, that's the requirements. Pre-planned, yes, to a certain extent. But as we saw what happened now, so all those hotels, stop. It is so sad, though, that many people have lost their jobs. But on the other hand, people realize and they turn to Allah and said, Ya Allah, you all knowing, you the doer, you the giver, you the taker. And many people turn to Allah. Why? Because we were in the rat race. we tend to have forgotten Allah in a certain way of our lives, at a certain point in our lives. And in this case, we did stopped everything and we turned back. And during the first couple of days of lockdown, I can remember very clearly, there was, okay, all the chaos was all the different groupings and whatever may have happened, but let's throw that behind us. But let's just think, in every house, for those people that were not going to the masjids, that never went to the masjid, that used to just be in their businesses, chasing life, doing what had to be done, so-called, what they did was, there was nothing to be done, sit in the house, and then realize, let me sit on that musalla. Many people turn to Allah, and alhamdulillah, I've heard from many people who say that we have started our daily salat, be it 3, 4, 5 salats a day, whatever it may be now that we opened, but we are making it a point that we read some salat. We read some salat. Isn't that a good thing? So there was a reset button put, and that reset button was just one click, and let's reset the world. And now that we're going back to almost normality, we pray to the Almighty Allah that everything that we learned over these difficult times must still be in our hearts, and we must still understand and believe Allah does. Allah is most merciful. Many countries in the world that we visited, we go out, we go see those countries, we now realize that if it's not meant for us to go there, we're not going to go there. We only go to those places, we only go to different destinations if Allah wants us to go there. That's the important thing, and that's what we should look at. We should sincerely believe that that's what it is. And the Almighty Allah is all doing, all knowing, all seeing. So we beg of Allah, Ya Allah, please forgive us. Ya Allah, please make it easy on us with the spike coming up again. We pray that the Almighty Allah must make it a point that we don't get affected once again with all these things. But what's meant to be will be, but we take our precautions. So Allah make it easy for us. Allah guide us. Allah protect us. Allah forgive us for our shortcomings. That's most important. Somebody sent something this morning and I was listening to it. It was on a voice. Converted it to paper. I thought I'll just read it out. It's so appropriate. Just of what we're talking now. It so happens that this whole reset of the world is probably related to what I'm going to read out to you now. It's written by somebody by the name of John Day, and he's from Thailand. And it goes like this. I was born in a poor village in the northeastern part of Thailand. When I was a child, everything was fun and easy. When television came, many people came to the village and said, "You are poor. You need to go to Bangkok to pursue success in your life." So I felt bad. I felt poor. I needed to go to Bangkok. When I went to Bangkok, it wasn't much fun though. I worked very hard, 8 hours a day. That was minimum. But what I could eat was just a bowl of noodles per meal. And where I stayed, it was very bad. A small room where a lot of people slept. It was hot inside. I started questioning a lot. When I work hard, my life is also hard. There must be something wrong because I produced a lot of things, but I could not get enough. I tried studying in the university. I started looking at subjects in the university. Every faculty, most of them is destructive knowledge. If you learn to be an architect or an engineer, that means you ruin more. The more these people work, the more mountains will be destroyed and good land will be covered with more and more concrete. If you learn agriculture, that means you learn how to poison the land, the water, and learn to destroy everything. We have so many people who have finished from university, so many clever people on this earth, but our lives are harder and harder. We make it hard for who? We work hard for who right now? I started thinking why I had to be in Bangkok. I thought about when I was a child. Nobody worked 8 hours a day like how we do each year in the city. Everybody worked
2 months a year. Plant the rice in 1 month and harvest the rice in the next month. The rest of the 10 months is free time. I feel like something went wrong there. I cannot live in this way of living. So I decided to quit university and went back home. When I went back, I started living like how I remember living when I was young. I started working 2 months a year. I got 4 tons of rice. And the whole family of 6, we ate less than 0.5 ton a year. So we sold the other 3.5 tons of rice. Then I dug 2 fish ponds. We had all the fish all year round. I started a small little garden, less than 0.5 acre. I spent only 15 minutes a day taking care of the garden. I have more than 30 varieties of vegetables in the garden. I started to do earthen building. It was easy. I spent 2 hours per day. In 3 months, I built a house. I built at least 1 house a year. I don't have money, but with whatever I had, I built a house. And I built many more houses every year. Another friend who was most clever in class and spent 3 months to build his house too. But he was in debt and bonded for 30 years. So compared to him, I have 29 years and 9 months of free time. I need not pay a bond. The next thing is clothing. I feel like I'm poor. I feel like I'm not handsome. I try to dress like somebody else, like a movie star perhaps, to make myself look good and look better. I spend 1 month to save money to buy a pair of jeans. When I wear it, I turn left and I turn right to look in the mirror. Every time I look in the mirror, I am the same person. The most expensive jeans cannot change my life. I started thinking more about that because when we follow fashion, we never catch up with it. Because we follow it, we are following it, so you can't catch up with it. So you got to follow fashion all the time. So don't follow it. Just stay here and use what you have. Right. And the last thing is when I fall sick, what will I do? Sickness is a normal thing. And it's not a bad thing, though. Sickness is something to remind us that something is wrong in my life. So when I get sick, I know I need to stop and come back to myself. I learned how to use water to heal myself, how to use earth to heal myself, how to use basic knowledge to heal myself. After I rely on these 4 things and prayer, I feel like life is very easy. I feel freedom. I feel free because they have a lot of time. They have time to be with themselves. And when they have time to be with themselves, they have time to understand themselves. And when they have time to understand themselves, they can see what they want in their lives. Many people see that they want happiness. They want love. They want to enjoy their lives. We were taught to disconnect ourselves from everything else, to be independent, so we can rely on the money only. We don't need to rely on each other, but now to be happy, we need to come back, to connect to ourselves again, to connect to other people, to connect our minds and body together again. Life is easy though. The 4 basic needs, food, house, clothes, and medicine. This must be cheap and easy for everybody. That's the civilization. But if you make these 4 things very hard for many people to get it, that's uncivilized. So now we look at everywhere around us. Everything is so hard to get. So I feel like now is the most uncivilized era of humans on this earth. I feel that's wrong. It's not normal. To be a normal person, to be equal to animals. The bird makes a nest in 1 or 2 days. The rat digs a hole in 1 night. But the clever human being, like us, spend 30 years to buy and pay a house off. And many can't believe that they can have a house in this life too. So it's wrong. It's not normal. So I just want to come back to normal. How appropriate. That's the reset button in our lives. That's the reset button in our lives. Let's get back to normal. We don't have to be so extreme, but let's get back to normal. Let's do things differently. Let's not be so dependent on this world for all the stuff that we're chasing in this world. With this whole pandemic that came across and hit us with a blow, we should realize, is it all worth it at the end? You have it today. You don't have it tomorrow. All the money in this world that people had could not help one bit. When people were affected with this virus, lying in hospitals severely with pain, difficulty of breathing, and so much more. And more than that, all the money you had, you could buy nothing during the lockdown. Nothing. You were not allowed to buy anything. You could have the most amount of money. The people that benefited and lived the best were the ones who had gardens, vegetable patches in the yard, fruit trees in the yard, and ate from the earth that Allah has produced for us. Those people were enjoying life. With the gardening, all the veggies, all the veggie plants, doing what had to be done naturally. That is now life to live. But we are at a time now which is very difficult. But then again, we love to travel, we love to go for a holiday. That's different again. That's on another level. Allah make it easy for us all, inshallah. Some realization somewhere along the line in life will come to some of us, inshallah. Life will change for us for the better, with more comfort in this world. And inshallah, Allah make it easy for us all, and Allah protect us, and Allah save us from this so-called second wave that's coming through. Countries in the world are now not taking South Africans in particular. There are many different countries that we are inquiring about, and they're telling us, South Africans, no. Your numbers are now reaching just a bit too much, 800,000 plus. There are countries that I know of that had 1,000 cases and they shut down completely. They haven't opened again as yet. Reason being, they just want to stay safe and just be themselves. And the people from in the country are just saying one thing. We are now enjoying our lives. The way it is, we're going back to our villages, especially in the Far East. The Far East, Southeast Asia, all those people, they come from villages. If you look at all these different countries in the Far East, you'd find many people got homes in the villages. They come to work during the year in the cities, in the major cities. They live in buildings, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 people in rooms and in small little flatlets. Come end of the year or mid-year, they pack up and go back to their villages. When they go to their villages, life becomes normal for them and they are free in their own villages. Then they've got to come back to work again and continue the rat race. Now, in many parts of Asia, you'd find that's happening. You find Thailand is the same. You find Cambodia the same. You find Vietnam the same. Laos also the same. Myanmar also, they do the same. Indonesia as well. You'd find that the parents are probably in the villages, the children are out in the cities, they come back with the parents for a holiday and just chill out in village life. That's what's happening in those parts of the world. And they live a life full of freshness in the villages. If you go to any of these villages in the Far East and you go out and see how they live in the villages, you would envy them. The way they live and how they do things in those villages, seriously, we'd envy them. So that is life today. Food for thought. And we should just think about all this rhetoric after this lockdown, after the lifting of the lockdown. Let us change our lives with simplicity, inshallah. And with that in mind, with the help of Allah, inshallah, everything will go well for us. We will continue right after the break.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back. If you just joined us, you're listening to myself, Muhammad Lambat, on Radio Islam, Medium Wave 1548, on the Globe Trotting program, where we talk travel of different destinations. We've been talking about the coronavirus situation over the last few months. We were talking of the different countries, the situation in different countries, the numbers, how they handled it, what they did, how they did, all those things. It's now slowing down a bit, alhamdulillah. Some countries are opening, as we said. There are many that are not yet open for South Africans, but they are open for other parts of the world. Be that as it may, it's now going to become a little more expensive to travel. We find many countries now want you to have your certification, your certificates, like how we used to have the yellow card, we used to have those yellow fever card, or I have whatever they called it, but that is now, to me, that is like almost obsolete. I think Saudi Arabia requires it. But many countries don't even want that. But they wanted the yellow card before. Now it's become a must in every country of the world, where they want a coronavirus certificate that you are clean. You do not have the virus. So you've got to go for a test. Across the board, the prices range from 800 rands to 7,000 rands. Different parts of the world, different pricing. Just entirely depends which country it is. But, for example, in the UK, it's about £200. £200 at 20 rands. 4,000 rands. Just to get your certification for your test results and get a certificate to travel. Then your flights are a little more expensive. So everything for now is going to be a little higher. Your flights, because many companies closed down, so flights is a bit of a problem. And then you have this corona thing. Then the risk of going out, and in the event anything happens in that country, what do you do? Your accommodation that you have, because you can't travel out from that country, the accommodation has to be bought by you. So now if you're stuck there for 2 weeks, you've got to pay for that accommodation for 2 weeks. What do we do in that case? That's the problem. Now today we can say easy, okay, let's go for a tour, let's do this, let's go here, let's go there. It's easy to go to all these countries, let's go do all that. But believe me, if it comes to a point where the virus hits that country and then they do a lockdown and you are in that country, what do you do? You are stuck. There are people that were in South Africa from abroad. As soon as lockdown happened in South Africa initially and they didn't have sufficient time to get out of the country, they were stuck here until recently. Vice versa, there were people that were stuck outside and couldn't come back here, although their home is here in South Africa. Very difficult. So it's the risk that we take. What will happen? So that is why we're trying not to chance it. We try not to chance it. What if just, Allah knows best, but if it does happen, you're stuck. Today, I want to talk to you a little about Cambodia. I was doing up some reading and research on Cambodia. We've been to Cambodia and we've seen many, many things. But I just want to bring you, just update you a little on Cambodia itself. Now, Cambodia, being a country that is in the Far East, up north of Cambodia you have Thailand, that's northwest. Then northeast you have Laos. On the right-hand side, which is the eastern side, you have Vietnam. And on the left-hand side, completely on the left, bottom left, which you're looking at this, almost the southwest, you have the Gulf of Thailand, which is ocean. So Cambodia has a lovely, lovely place where you have beaches and lovely, lovely warm waters. That is a place, a city called Sihanoukville. Sihanoukville, you'll find, when you do a cruise, when you do the cruise from Malaysia, you go down that whole belt. If you're doing that cruise, you come, you do Laos, you do Vietnam.
When you come to Cambodia, they stop at Sihanoukville. Now, the only thing is Sihanoukville, from Phnom Penh, which is the main city, Sihanoukville is a bit of a distance. It's almost over 200 kilometers from Phnom Penh city. It's about 225 kilometers from Phnom Penh city to go to the coast. Now, the main city in Cambodia is Phnom Penh. You spell it P-H. It's P-H-N-O-M. P-H-N-O-M. P-E-N-H. We call it Phnom Penh. That is the city of Cambodia. That's where everything happens. Cambodia is an extremely poor country, but content people and kind people, lovely people. Now, the first civilization in the area rose many, many, many thousands of years ago. And that was in the Mekong River Delta in South Vietnam. Now, the civilization was known to the Chinese, who called it Funan at that time. Now, that was Cambodia. Over time, you had the Khmer Empire in Cambodia. Like all civilizations, the Khmer Empire, it was an overwhelmingly agricultural society. Although there were many craftsmen and great majority of people that were there, they were farmers. Their staple diet was rice. And we'd find in all the Far Eastern countries, their staple diet is rice. And they love their rice. Now, the Khmers, they were animists. They believe that spirits inhabited natural phenomena, such as the earth and trees. And later, Hinduism and Buddhism were introduced, but they coexisted with the traditional beliefs, which we see till today. Now, the rich and the powerful built fine temples. The only stone buildings in Cambodia you'd find were the temples. And they were richly decorated with fine stone carvings at that time already. The most famous temple in Cambodia, which many people from around the world will go to Cambodia to visit, the Angkor Wat. A-N-G-K-O-R, Angkor Wat, W-A-T. Angkor Wat Temple, which was built in early 12th century. Now, for Cambodia, it was prosperous and powerful. Then, about a thousand years ago, that's 1000 AD, King Jayavarman V was killed. Civil war followed until another king came in and he founded another dynasty. So they have a dynasty there, they have a kingdom, they have kingship in Cambodia. Now, between the years 1500 to 1800, the 16th century Cambodian power continued to decline. And at the end of the century, Cambodia fell under Thai suzerainty, that was under loose control. And in 1594, the Thais captured the capital. After that, they dominated the region. So that whole region, that is why you would find the features of all those people from Laos, Thailand, Myanmar, Cambodia, Vietnam. They all have that, similar to Chinese features, but very much, I would say, Asian, Indian features. You'll find the Indian features. Now, that is because of the follow-up of people that came from India, and came down that way. So during that time, that's all what happened. Now, you'll have Cambodia in current times. Now, in the 19th century, King Chun, which was from about 1806 to 1834, turned to the Vietnamese for protection from the Thais. Because remember, the Thai people were in Cambodia. Now, the Thais were annoyed by the policy. And when a rebellion occurred in South Vietnam in 1833, they took advantage by invading Cambodia. However, the Vietnamese king crushed the rebellion and the Thai army retreated. And as a result, the Vietnamese emperor strengthened his control over Cambodia. And that is why in the southern part of Vietnam, the Cambodians still believe to date that that part of Cambodia and that part of Vietnam was Cambodia, right through across to the sea, right through to South China Sea. The Cambodians believe that that was their land. And that land was stolen and taken over by Vietnam. That's the southern part of Vietnam. That is why if you find that the agriculture and you'd find the greenery from Cambodia, if you're driving from Cambodia to Saigon, which is also about 280 kilometers from Phnom Penh city to Saigon, which you just cross a land border and you go across. Now, if you look and if you're driving along that whole line, which is like I say, over 280 kilometers, you'd find very, very similar. You'd find the palm trees, you'd find the coconut trees, you'd find the rubber plantations, all spanning across from one country to the next. So that is why the southern Cambodian, the Cambodians from the south, always would say that this land that belongs to Vietnam today was Cambodian land. And they still maintain that. And they do have fights about it from time to time, but not to take over the land because it's officially belonging to Vietnam currently. Now, under French rule, which they also came and they invaded Cambodia, some economic development took place in Cambodia at the time. That was in the 20th century. Roads, railways were built, buildings were put up. There was the rubber industry that grew in Cambodia. However, the Cambodians were forced to pay taxes. And they had to pay their taxes to the French government who occupied Cambodia. Then in 1941, Cambodia was occupied by the Japanese. However, at first, they allowed the French officials to remain in their posts. But then in March 1945, about 4 years later, as the Japanese were losing the war, they desperately tried to curry favor with the Cambodians. And they arrested all the French officials and declared Cambodia independent. However, when the Japanese surrendered and the French took over again, they arrived back in 1945, October. This time, the French they allowed the Cambodians to have their political parties and their constitution. So they now got things sorted out. So the French were there. That's why you'd find in Cambodia many buildings in the cities. You'd find having the French architecture because of them. But the worst time came, the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia. In 1975, the horrific and tragic era of Cambodian history began in the reign of the Khmer Rouge. Now, they were led by a guy by the name of Pol Pot. Many of you must have heard of Pol Pot, P-O-L-P-O-T, Pol Pot, Pol Pot. Now, he was also known as Brother Number One. How many people were killed by Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge is not known for certain, but it was probably at least 1.5 million, and it may have been as many as 3 million people. And Pol Pot declared that history would begin in Cambodia. The first year of revolution was now the first year of history, according to him. And in 1975, Cambodia was a mainly agricultural country, and Pol Pot decided it should be completely agricultural. This meant that all the people from the towns and cities, they were forced to move to the countryside. And Pol Pot had decided that agricultural output should double in 4 years. It was a totally unrealistic target that he's put. Private property was banned and collective farms were formed. So they nationalized everything. They were supposed to grow 3 tons of rice per hectare. Again, unrealistic. Now, people were made to work very long hours and try to grow that extra rice to meet the target. They were given insufficient food. Many people fell ill and they died from a combination of exhaustion and malnutrition. Now, that was not all. Religion was totally banned in Cambodia. Although today there's lots of Muslims, there's masjids, but religion was then banned. People that were caught practicing Buddhism, they were executed. Family relationships were also banned. You were not allowed to gather as families. And on the grounds that parents exploited their children. Now, furthermore, the smallest infringement of the rules that Pol Pot had put had resulted in execution. Although they were half-starved people, they were caught foraging for food, they were executed. They were not allowed to look for food. They were given a ration. People were also executed for being lazy. Needless to say, anyone who complained about anything or spoke anything against Pol Pot or his regime, they were executed. I repeated that word executed many times.
There's a museum that we went to in Cambodia. I'm going to tell you of that museum, but that was the saddest part of it all. We went to that museum in the city. And when we went to that museum, if ever anyone would go to that museum, you would cry for what you had seen in that museum. It was like real bad. Now, the Khmer Rouge, he murdered, that group murdered all intellectuals. They didn't want anybody to be more intelligent. Soon the people who could speak any foreign language, or even people that wore glasses, were executed, thinking that they were reading books and they had to wear glasses. They were executed. The nightmarish situation was ended by a war with Vietnam. And the Vietnamese invaded Cambodia in December 1978 and quickly prevailed. Unfortunately, Pol Pot escaped and he did not die till 1998. So 20 years later, after he escaped, he died. And Pol Pot's soldiers, they fled to Thailand. And they were welcomed by the Thais, who feared a Vietnamese invasion. And now the Khmer Rouge continued a guerrilla war against the Vietnamese. However, the Vietnamese forces withdrew from Cambodia in 1989. Afterwards, the negotiations began among several different parties, and the result was the Paris Peace Accords in 1991. And communism was abandoned in Cambodia, and a provisional government ruled until 1993, when elections were held and the constitution was framed, and Sihanouk was made a constitutional monarch. However, the Khmer Rouge refused to take part in the elections, and they continued their guerrilla war. Fortunately, 1996, Pol Pot's second-in-command, Leng Sari, defected in 1996. Many Khmer Rouge troops followed him, and Pol Pot himself died in 1998, and peace returned to Cambodia. Now, when you talk of what Pol Pot had done, it is unreal of the atrocities that he had led in Cambodia. There is a museum that we went to in Cambodia, in Phnom Penh. We went to this museum. Now, the capital has seen and still does see its fair share of hard times and struggle. But with the city's checkered past comes a strength and resilience that is infectious. Now, the Killing Fields, if anybody had watched the Killing Fields, that is what happened in Cambodia. It's a short journey away from the busy city streets, but continue to serve as a humbling reminder of the atrocities and the victims of the Khmer Rouge regime. The Killing Fields are still there to date, where they had now dug out thousands and thousands of skulls. They dug out bones and they brought them to a museum in the city, the Tall Slang Genocide Museum. And that is housed in an old school, which also works as a sobering reminder of the horrors of the people of Cambodia that have faced in recent living memory. That when you go there and when you follow the timeline, you realize that it was yesterday that people were murdered, butchered, killed, chopped. They were deboned also. And Cambodia, however, isn't all that about its dark past. If you walk in the streets of Phnom Penh, you'll find the smiles from the locals who are going about their daily business, browsing the markets or just hanging out along the banks of the Tonle Sap River. That is right, a river that runs where there are thousands of people living along the banks of the river. We've been to that area as well. Beautiful, very nice. You'd find poverty, 100% you'd find poverty, but you'd find people that are content in life. Now, when you visit, make sure you visit the Wat Phom area, after which the city is named, for some space and time to reflect on this amazing city. And you have to go to all these places. Cambodia is a country that is rich in history. Not very poor though, or not very rich in wealth, but rich in history. Now, Sihanoukville is a city which is now being improved and which is being developed by the Chinese. They've put up
casinos, they've put up hotels, they've really brought it up in a mashup of Silicon Valley in Las Vegas and Singapore. But better than all three combined. They have put up a city of miracles. They have done so much. And the town of Sihanoukville is surrounded on three sides by the Bay of Thailand. From the beaches and the surrounding hills, many of the country's small islands can be seen. Many of the beaches are filled with grass hut restaurants. There are the beaches, they are rocky, and you get some that have big resorts, and some are just pure white sandy beaches, warm water. Most of all, the beaches are crowded with construction at the moment. Chinese tourists and workers are abundant there. Now, for 2019 and 2020, there's construction almost everywhere. You'd find hundreds of cranes, which we've seen also in the city of Phnom Penh. The Chinese are busy building. Now, a dozen islands surround Sihanoukville, and a couple of these are fairly unspoilt for the moment. You get the beaches, forest treks, diving, swimming, and just chilling out on the beach. That's the main activity that's taking place there. So if ever you plan on going to Cambodia, visit Sihanoukville. There's another city called Siem Reap. You have to go to Siem Reap. It's not so much as a buzzing city, but you have to visit it. And then you must visit Poi Pet, P-O-I-P-E-T, also beautiful. Kampong Cham also, not very developed, but it's a must-see. And then you have Krati, K-R-A-T-I-E. So Cambodia is a place which you can go and visit. You need some time at least. There's not much to do if you're just going to Phnom Penh though. But go out to the outskirts. Go out and visit all those cities on the outskirts. But what you have to do is to visit the history of Cambodia. Go to the museum in the city of Phnom Penh, where you would find, and we had seen this, they have every classroom, built up classrooms, they were torture camps. And the remnants are still there. You still see it, how they tortured people. You can picture it. How Pol Pot tortured his people in those classrooms where they had chains in every little cubicle that they built in the classrooms. It was a high school before. Upstairs, downstairs, every classroom has got some history behind it. And different types of cages they built. And they tied the people up there and they tortured them. They broke their hands. They broke their legs. They put them in vats, those big vats. You get those big, like, porcelain pots, huge porcelain pots. They filled it with feces. They would hang the people upside down with their legs up. And with the block and tackle, they would release them slowly and push them into those vats. And those vats were full of feces and water. They would dip their half body into the feces and lift them out again. And dub them in again and lift them out again. And they would torture them like that and kill them in that manner. They would pull their fingernails out. They would cut their fingers off. They would do all those things that you wouldn't think that's humanely possible, but they did it. And that is a museum you have to visit. It's right in the center of the Phnom Penh town. You must go there. And if you are going further on, there's a town on the outskirts called Kilometer 9, that is where you'll find majority Muslims. You'll find they have masjids, they have madrasas during the day. It is buzzing with all the children in burqas and youngsters in kurtas walking around there. You'd find that in Kilometer 9. Beautiful and lovely. Just go have a look at that. And then you think about life, of what you just heard, what I mentioned in the beginning, of the youngster that was born in Thailand, in a village, that what I read out. Think of that and think of life like that, for against the life we are living where we are today, because our life is short-lived. So be very wary in South Africa. Let us make dua that Allah protect us and Allah guide us, because there's so much that's happening here, and Allah make it easy for us all, be it white, black, pink, yellow, green, all of us. Allah protect us and Allah guide us. From myself, Muhammad Lambat, until next week, same place, same time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.